And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I should go. And so it opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are. And we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
All right, you're welcome along to the GAR. This is the Hurling Show with JJ and Paddy with me as usual on a Monday. Lads, we have to start with this Austin Gleeson stuff and get it out of the way, because we've Jarlot Burns coming up, who is chairman of the Standing Committee on Playing Rules. And instead of us all agreeing that this is very harsh on Austin Gleeson, let's actually move the conversation on to how can we change this from being a straight red to actually, you know, that was not dangerous. Like this, it reminds me of the Dear McConnelly situation. It's the exact analysis I gave of that is in... There was nothing in it. He did break the rules. Under the rule that's there, he could be in trouble.
Yeah.
But the problem is the rule here.
Yeah, yeah. It's just black. The rule is black and white as well. And I think it's just too severe. The Ray Carr doesn't suit the actual what he done there yesterday as well. Like, Luke Mead didn't make much of it. He was surprised the helmet was took off him. But
it just slipped off him, didn't it?
Wasn't injured. And the lads made a great point yesterday. The helmets are designed to come off your head there as well. They're not designed to stay on as well. So it came off it very easily. And some lads have loose straps on the helmet as well. So it comes off very, very easy. Look, when you do slow motion and you look at it in slow motion, it does look bad, all right? To the letter of law, look, again... The issue is the law is the problem here, like, you know, because for someone to miss an Ireland for something like that, I think it could be absolutely scandalous, to be honest.
Yeah, Paddy, what's it like? I mean, explain to me here that, because I've never played hurling, like, is Austin Gleeson is stupid there, or can these things happen in the heat of battle where you kind of lose your mind and there wasn't much in it?
Well, it definitely can happen in the heat of battle. Like, that's, you know, and people looking at home, and I even did it myself, said, Jesus, after last week. But it happened so quick, and you're just trying to get every inch, and people don't see that as important. But I know people who've played, Jade probably says, you see every inch as being important, and every shove, and, you know, every little hitch can get in your man. And look, it was silly, right? But it is in the heat of the moment. And, like... You know, he hadn't that much to think about. When the hand came on over his shoulder and up near the helmet, she's like, I thought after the last few weeks, you would have just said, right, read a lot here now, but your hand anywhere but there. But players don't think of it like that. Even Conor Gleeson, the game is won. And to say, well, I know we'll talk about it later, but I'm sure looking at it again, he goes, Jesus, what was I at? And now Austin Gleeson's after putting himself in a difficult situation. But look, I think you're on the right wavelength about the severity of it. Like, if you go and just look at a lad, catch his face guard or his earpiece and just yank it as hard as you can, I think that's very dangerous. But look, yesterday was silly, but it was in no way dangerous to Luke Mead.
Yeah, so it's believed that Barry Kelly, this is what happened with Adrian Toohey, which was completely innocuous as well, as far as I'm concerned. Barry Kelly said in his report that he dealt with that incident in last Sunday's semi-final. So he saw it, didn't think it was worth dealing with. So the CCCC cannot get involved then. So we'll have to wait to see what James Owen says. If James Owen says he saw what Austin did, but because Mead was sitting on the ground and the helmet just kind of came off so easily, like when you slow these things down into pictures and you see Austin grabbing that helmet, yeah. But that happened so fast, yeah. And it came off so easily. His head didn't jerk. You know, there was nothing necessarily dangerous in it. So if James Owen says in his report, I saw that, there wasn't much in it, let's move on, then the CCCC can't get involved at all. So you would hope that's what happens.
Yeah, well, you presume he did see it, because the ball was gone over the line, and obviously the referee's focus would have been where the ball was, and it just happened right where the ball is after going over the line. So you're presuming that he did see what happened, and he had just, again, the common sense to say, right, nothing in that, let's go play away. And hopefully that is in his report now, because so that back in 2014, I done it with against Shane Down as well. The ball broke in behind him, I just put my hand up, caught his face, didn't know where he was, so trying to feel where he was,
yeah.
Caught his face guard, and again, lucky enough, I wasn't pulled up on it for that, because maybe it was the same situation, the referee seen it and didn't need to do anything on it. But as I said, it can happen very, very, very easily, like, you know what I mean, because your hands, you're trying to get the most out of yourself, and for someone like Austin Gleeson to miss the final. I know, look, I suppose they're talking about he's not a dirty player, he's not this, he's not that, but look, again, the incident is a nothing incident. It doesn't make a difference who done it. If any other Watford players were done the exact same situation, we'd be talking the exact same thing about it too, you know.
Yeah, because listen, all four of you pundits, Damien and Conal, are the same on a Thursday, all agree that this is very, very severe. So instead of us all agreeing all the time and having the same conversation, I'm delighted to say Jarlett Burns, who's chairman of the GAA Standing Committee on Playing Rules, is on the line now. Jarlett, welcome to the Hurling Show.
Thank you, Colm.
Jarlett, I want to talk about this issue because we're all in agreement here on the show every week about this issue, because it's coming up week after week, as in the punishment doesn't seem to fit the crime. The rule seems to be very severe for some innocuous interference with helmets, and we're kind of agreeing that there maybe should be a separation, a red card for dangerous interference with the helmet, and then maybe a yellow card for, you know, other interference.
Yeah, and I understand where that would come from, given some of the instances that have happened this year. We would never make a decision just as a knee-jerk as a result of a spate of incidents which might happen in a particular year. You would take it all, look at the whole championship, look at how implications for a rule change would have, right from the last minute of an All-Ireland final to, you know, a wet Tuesday in Armagh whenever you're playing a Junior B league match, and how that would be affected. I think you have to understand where this came in. This used to be a yellow card offence. The Medical Scientific and Welfare Committee were campaigning for a few years to have it changed to become a Category 3 offence, which is a red card and a one-match suspension, column. And the reason for that was that we've often heard of a concussion, and we all know about concussion. A lesser-known infraction of the brain is called contrecoup. And that's what happens whenever there is a sudden stop within the skull, which is exactly what happens whenever somebody pulls your helmet. Now, we would always say, I have a fella plays hurling, and all my sons have played hurling, you know, the helmet and the stick are out there for your protection, and they should never, ever be used or be used by somebody else to try and cause damage to you. And, you know, back when it was a yellow card, if you turn, let's say, that into a yellow card offence, very quickly, it just becomes the culture in the GAA.
No, Jarlett. It's not. It's making the Austin Gleeson one from yesterday a yellow card offence. It's not making any dangerous pull of a face guard, and I think it's very obvious how you could separate the two. There's one which is that jerking action that you're talking about, which is 100% dangerous, and then there's also a fella sitting on the ground and his helmet just being lifted off his head, which is absolutely not dangerous. It's no jerk, it just slipped off his head, and this happened in the heat of battle. There can be a clear distinguish clearly between those two scenarios.
Well, I would disagree with you there, because if you look at the rule, Category 3, it says behaving in a way which is dangerous to an opponent, including deliberately pulling on or taking hold of a face guard or any part of an opponent's helmet in hurling. Now, deliberately, that's where the referee's own judgment comes in as to whether or not it's deliberate. Now, if you look at some of the instances this year, the famous one, Adrian Toohey versus Bonner Maher, that was Barry Kelly adjudicating that. And he decided that, you know, OK, he did pull Patrick Maher's helmet, but it wasn't deliberate. It was just, that was part of the heat of battle. Whenever somebody is lying on the ground and is absolutely no part of the play, and I don't want to get into incidences that haven't been adjudicated upon yet, retrospectively, by the CCCC, I fail to see why it's justifiable in any instance why anybody would want to touch anybody's face guard or his helmet. So, I mean, I would, and this all comes down to, I remember whenever I was playing myself, and Conan would know Jim McKeever well, a very, very famous player in Derry, who managed us at St Mary's in Belfast, and he used to say when we went out, very simple, don't give the referee any excuse at all to send you off. Don't do anything that is going to put a doubt in his mind about whether
I accept that, but do you think these punishments of players missing out on huge games are fitting these crimes? Harmless interference with a helmet. And I understand there's deliberate and non-deliberate. That's a different argument. Why can't it be separated into dangerous and non-dangerous? As in, if the head doesn't jerk and it's not dangerous, like the example you gave of whatever doctor is talking about it, if there's not a jerking motion which is dangerous, well then this just a face guard interference and that's a yellow card. Like, I mean, this is not fair that these players are missing huge games based on such innocuous silly little interferences.
Yeah, and I hear what where you're coming from on that. And if you look at even last year and this year with regard to the black card, you see people like Robbie Kiley last year, Dermot Connolly, maybe Kieran Hughes, Lee Keegan, Kevin McKernan. I remember Niall Sludden getting a black card against Mayo, and you see these sad faces being sent off, and you have this very, very emotional response. And I mean, Tadhg de Burka, I mean, what an incredible ambassador he is, at an exemplary record. And I have absolutely no desire to say anything other than that about him in particular. But the thing about it is, you see, that's all very logical and rational. I sit in the DRA column, and I go to hearings all the time. In fact, only I was on holidays, I would have been on the Tadhg de Burka hearing. And it's amazing how these things can get pulled apart and torn apart and legally parsed and analysed. And this word dangerous, you know, suddenly then becomes, was it dangerous? Who decides who is dangerous? And if you look at, for example, whenever you go to the DRA, there are three things that you have to pass: illegality, irrationality, or procedural impropriety, as they call it. And this whole thing of irrationality, you know, the referee showing he was irrational, that's what they tried to get the Tadhg de Burka thing off on. And that comes from, I don't want to go into the legalities of this, from the Stardust, Keegan v. Stardust in 1986. And you hear that all the time at DRA hearings, that the referee behaved irrationally. The second one then is the compelling evidence. See if there was compelling evidence at DRA that showed, let's say, it was another player other than Tadhg de Burka tugged at Joe's helmet. Well, that's okay. That succeeds at the DRA. My advice to players is, you know, don't prepare your temperament before you go out into any game.
Yeah, no, I know that, Charlotte, but that's fair enough. Like, obviously, you want players just, you know, not for this not to occur, but these things are occurring, right? There's no, absolutely no question about that, and in huge, huge games. And it sounds to me like putting the blanket red card on everything is trying to make your life easier defending them at DRA level rather than what's fair on players, because you have answer the question of splitting the rule book out into dangerous and non-dangerous. Like, I mean, that looks like a solution to me, but your motivation for not doing that is some potential DRA dispute, which I would be on the lines of what's fair on players missing out in huge games.
But already, if you look at that rule, the rule as it stands at the moment did already save Adrian Twitty this year, you know, in the game in the semi-final, and other players as well, you know. So as the, because whenever the referee can decide that it's not deliberate, even, and I would argue that for Adrian Twitty, did the Patrick Maher, even though it was innocuous, it was still dangerous, you know. So under your definition, if it's dangerous or deliberate or not deliberate, you know,
Charlotte, it gives referees more leeway to give the yellow rather than the red, which seems very, very, you know, severe punishment for some of these, you know, interferences. It seems very harsh. It would the referee's hands would not be tied to the extent that they are now.
Yes, and what would happen? And I am not saying at all that, you know, this is not something that we might need to look at. We will look at all of those instances. We will talk to the referees committee. We'll talk to the Medical, Scientific and Welfare Committee when it's all over. This year, obviously, there would be no change between now and the All-Ireland final.
No.
But we just have to be very careful about change that we make and how that's perceived, and then the culture that becomes embedded. And the reason why I say that is that when I look at underage players going out at hurling now, on the 12s, on the 14s, on the 16s, they know that the helmet is a place where you do not go anywhere near. You just do not touch that whatsoever.
But Charlotte, this is not an issue in the game.
Yeah, I can give you an example of a non-dangerous infraction, which is something which is a disgraceful abuse of the helmet. I remember hearing, and I'm not even going to name the two players involved, but the full forward was marking the full back. And just at the moment that the ball was within All-Ireland final was being put in, he just put his hand to the players at the back of the helmet and just tipped it up about 2 inches. Totally safe. There was no contrecoup. There was going to be no concussion. But what was happening there was, it wasn't dangerous, but it was actually affecting the player's sight, the full-back sight. I think he scored 1-7 with man of the match, and he actually boasted a bit of it later on to other people. So that's a non-dangerous use of the helmet. But one which has a massive effect on the game, whenever you're wearing a helmet in any game, particularly with a face guard, it's already a significant distraction to yourself.
Yeah. And it's already a foreign body that's on your head. Yeah, in that scenario, the referee obviously gives him a yellow card, just like as if a full forward is grabbing his man's jersey and pulling him away and getting the ball ahead of him and scoring a goal. It's a yellow card offence. Like, this kind of thing, that this has to be a red, I think it's just absolutely ridiculous. Like, every foul on the field isn't an absolute red. Like, in that scenario, there's loads of scenarios I could give you where the full forward is up to some gamesmanship. It doesn't mean it's a straight red and missing an All-Ireland final for those type of things. Just quickly before I let you go, Jarlett, there's 8 on your committee, right, that adjudicate over the playing rules. Like, there's a lot of people on it. There's Seamus Hickey and Frank Murphy that are from hurling backgrounds. Is that all?
John Tobin would also. Okay, from hurling backgrounds,
genuinely, because I ask Damien Hayes, JJ Laney, Paddy Stapleton, Conal Keeney here all the time, because I've never played hurling and I don't know how difficult it is to avoid a helmet, say when you're pushing someone away, or how difficult these ins and outs of the hurling game are. So how can people who have no knowledge of hurling be bringing in the, well, I know you didn't bring it in, but maybe continuing on this extremely severe punishment for something that they know nothing really about?
And that is why we would take advice from the Medical, Scientific and Welfare Committee, who pushed for this in the first place, bearing in mind that one of the core values of the GAA is player welfare. We have to show welfare to our players, and also bearing in mind that every year we have to go and try and renegotiate an insurance agreement that is going to take all of those into consideration, and that we're not going to have instances of concussion or contrecoup or some of the other very, very complex brain injuries that can happen whenever people meddle, whether it's dangerous or not, with somebody else's helmet. So I would certainly not be jumping out of my skin for any change to the helmet rule being a Category 3 infraction as it is. So on this one, Wally, we're just going to have to agree to differ.
Okay, Jarlett, thanks very much.
Okay.
Yeah, lads, it's interesting that there's 8 people on that committee along with Jarlett. Jarlett has no appetite to change it. You know, they've been advised on medical grounds that it's dangerous. But I don't think all of them are dangerous. But like, there's only Seamus Hickey and Frank Murphy who have hurling backgrounds are hurling people, for Sean Boylan's on it, Jim Murray is on it, Pat Daly's on it, John Tobin's on it, Dara O'Shea's on it. Now, John Tobin, you could, Jarlett would argue, is both. But like, I mean, I don't know what I'm talking about in this scenario. That's why I always have to ask you, what is this? Because to me, this looks like nothing. But I'm trying to ask you, what is this? And like, I mean, unless you've been in that heat of battle, and like you said, you've been with Shane Dowling wrestling, and you're, you know, these things can happen innocuously. How the hell can you be ruling on this? Or, you know, you would love Jarlett and that standing committee on playing rules to go take stock at the end of this season and just go, right, this is causing more hassle than it's worth. Let's keep the red, but let's also throw yellow in the mix and not be hamstringing the referees.
We even seen in this year's championship the difference between a red and a yellow, and Stephen Bennett against Cork the first day, that was a red card. That was he pulled Damien Catalan down and he pulled him to the ground. That was completely, he knew what he was doing, that was a red card, no issue there whatsoever. The rest of them are yellows at most, and for Tadhg Burke even to miss yesterday, that was absolutely scandalous, and I'm hoping now common sense will come out. But an easy way for these guys to do it is just bring in a yellow card, because the red card is just too severe for what Austin done, what Tadhg Burke done. It's just too, every player has done it down through their career, and it's happened to every player as well. You just get on with it, you put your helmet back on, you're not hurt, you're not affected, you'll go on and play the game again. And if a yellow card did come in for that, I think every player would be happy. Like, it's too extreme. The red card is too extreme.
Yeah, so you'd love if they took stock and maybe changed it at the end of this season. Yeah. I'm sure it's definitely going to be up for debate, because Jesus, we talked about it so much. I want to cover the Conor Gleeson sending off here, lads, before we move on, because I spoke with Kevin Moran and Dan Shanahan in Croke Park yesterday. What do you make of this, lads? Again, the same as Austin, Conor Gleeson, stupidity of the highest order. I've been in games towards Edwards with 2 minutes left, and like, I mean, you're involved in an altercation, you're 10 points up, you start laughing and point to the scoreboard. Yeah. Like, it's the worst, like, it's better than any boxer, any dig. You just laugh at them, and yeah, like, that's your answer. So it was stupid what he did. I didn't see Pat Horgan doing anything. No. I thought Patrick Horgan's reaction was OTT nearly to get him sent off, but I don't know. Like, I mean, kind of it didn't look like a big a slap of a hurl.
But look, I think Patrick Horgan got sent off for being hit, I'd say. Shane Kingston came in and gave Conor Gleeson the dig, alright, but I'd say the referee must have thought that Patrick Horgan did it and just sent him off and said, but the fairness of Patrick Horgan, I don't think he went down easy. A bit like that now on the kneecap or something like that. Now, you would feel you flinch, you'd hit the ground, alright, now you would be right. Fair now, just in his defence, but he must have said something before. But again, it's the thing that Conor Gleeson does miss the All-Ireland final. I don't think he'll ever make that mistake again, you know. And he had a fantastic game, man marked Conor Leahan out of it and scored a point himself, and a brilliant game. But just to hold your head, he's a young guy, I suppose. Like, and he just got caught up in the whole situation, the whole occasion of the whole game, really, more than anything. But if he does miss it, he'll regret it for the rest of his life, you know.
Yeah, no more than yourself, Paddy. Conor Gleeson plays on the edge, which is kind of a euphemism for being a bit of a dirty whore.
He does, and he shouldn't have it any other way. Actually, I absolutely love Conor Gleeson as a hurler. From the minute I saw him last year, I always look for the attitude, and he wouldn't back down for anybody. He's not, you know, he's no big man, but geez, he's fair aggressive now. And I suppose when you have that attitude, you know, kind of like Wayne Rooney, you're going to get yourself in hot water. He's obviously gets himself to, you know, up for it, or whatever way you might say it, emotional high or whatever, playing a match, and he really gets into it, and that can happen then when you're just in the moment. But look, like Milan, I suppose, back in 04, hitting back on Brian Murphy, it's just something he'll have to learn from. I can't see how he'll get off, to be honest with you. I know they're going to appeal it. It was minimal enough force, but like, if you strike out at all, you know, I'd say, to me, it looked like Horgan just kind of had a flick with his hand at him, and just right there, what does John Giles say, an eye for an eyelash with the Leeds lad back in the day, that he just flicked out, and it can be very, very sore when you get one on the bone there from the ash. But right, he's a class player, and actually he would be a fair loss now, because you could put him against a lot of them Galway backs, and he really takes games, or Galway forwards, and he takes games.
Yeah, that's the thing. Well, sometimes the reason I was thinking there was nothing in it, and I'm glad you and JJ have clarified it there, is that the little flick on the side of the knee can be very sore. Because yeah, I see hurls breaking off legs at some stages, and like, on that scale of belts that we do see sometimes, it was on the lower, you know, kind of level of that scale. But like, yeah, Patrick Horgan could have just got caught, and maybe I'm being very unfair on Patrick Horgan, who was outstanding on the day, and maybe he wasn't, you know, making a meal out of it. It can be very sore.
Yeah, just when the hurl does break, it probably breaks in the middle of the hurl, so it kind of takes a bit of the pressure off it. But when you're getting a slap of the boss, where most of the weight of the hurl is down in the boss of the hurl as well, and you're getting, there's no meat around your kneecap, no meat around your shin bone there as well. Like, if you do get a clatter on there now, it is sore.
So you're telling me it's better for someone to break a hurley off me than to,
and I'd rather if they didn't break, do one at all, to be honest. But no, if it did break, you would be better off, because half the force is gone straight away, you know.
Right,
when
okay,
it does break.
Didn't think about that. I always thought when it breaks, then you're in big trouble. Listen, lads, we've done loads on those incidents. Let's hope, like, this is just my own personal opinion, and you'd love to see Gleeson in. You'd love to see both Gleesons in the final. I think people from Galway would love to see it as well. Galway will still be favourites one way or another, but you'd love to see Waterford with their best team. But yeah, we've done enough on those incidents, because I caught up with Kevin Moran and Dan Shanahan in Croke Park yesterday. They were in great form. Here the two of them are. We'll start with Kevin Moran.
I look, sure, obviously over the moon. You know, we were really looking forward to the day, and really concentrated, I suppose, too much on what happened in the start of the summer, just trying to get ourselves right. But look, it was a huge occasion for us, you know, and I were thrilled, you know. Obviously, I suppose Connor's team is a little bit of a damper for us all, and you know, it's tough looking at him in there, but look, that's for another day, I suppose. And I suppose the whole thing with Tighe and all that was, you know, there was a lot of emotion, I suppose, involved, you know, without kind of going too deep into it. But it was, you know, it was brilliant to get the rewards there in the last 15 minutes, and yeah, we enjoyed it.
Yeah, the first half was cagey enough, you know, that midfield battle, like, that was a huge battle in the game, and I'd say you shaded it.
Yeah, look, I suppose, you know, the midfield, I suppose, nowadays in hurling sometimes is where the most space is on the field. And you know, I think myself and Jamie got chipped in with a few scores, which was important. And yeah, it was cagey, I suppose, right up until, I don't know, was it 50-60 minutes? And you know, it was real score for score, and either team going a point up and a point down, there wasn't too much in it. And I suppose the red card made a difference. And look, we got our guys on, they've done what they've been doing the last number of games and number of years. And we got the runners and got the scores, and obviously then we held on to and won comfortably in the end.
You seem to thrive on that kind of broken play around midfield. You know, you're able to get on loads of breaking ball, you're able to pop up in loads of space. It's just your game plan seems to suit you down to the ground.
I suppose some days it runs you. I wouldn't have said that the first day against Cork, now, to be honest with you.
Well, you were all like that.
look, you know, I think we've been working on a way of playing. Obviously, you know, some days it can be you, some days, you know, the ball could bypass you, you know. But look, happy the way things are going, you know, there's no point in saying otherwise. I suppose we turned the corner after the last game against Cork and against Peaches,
yeah.
And things have gone very, very well. And you know, we're over the moon, you know. I haven't really got a chance to even have a drink with the lads around here, so really looking forward to that and just relaxing and enjoying tonight.
Yeah, it's a wonder you're talking about having a drink. All the young lads are gone in there and they're going out close. You're still in the water for that.
Oh, yeah. You caught that already.
It's a sign of the time,
yeah. 30-year-old, yeah. Big exclamation mark over my head. I know, yeah. Look,
Noel Connors is like you. He's wearing shorts and a t-shirt as well. Everybody else.
I didn't actually need a break. I guarantee he doesn't have his jeans. I may go home and we get back to Offa and get something. Yeah, no, look, we came up last night and, you know, obviously they're just... The boys are thinking ahead.
Yeah, exactly. It's the sign of the times. Even Dan has to go now close.
Yeah. he's polished a diamond for him.
Come here. Was it a weird one coming into this game, having already played them? You know, like, I mean, you were out for revenge. You didn't perform that day. I'm sure Cork were in a weird situation, as in already having beaten you. I'm sure you kind of played on that a little bit. Did you?
I suppose it was probably weird for Cork as well, you know.
Probably,
you know, it is harder definitely to beat a team twice, no matter, you know. We didn't really talk about that because, you know, I suppose you can get caught up in the fact then that, oh, you know, if people are saying it's harder to beat a team twice, and then you're kind of, I suppose you don't meet the level that you need to, and you could be flat and things like that. So we actually, being straight up, we didn't actually talk too much about the Cork and what happened in June and things like that. You know, I think we focused a lot on the Wexford game, things in the Kilkenny game, things in the Offaly game, and you know, even the Tuig situation, and you know, all that kind of stuff. We just tried to get our own shop in order, and that's not going to, you know, that's probably not the answer you're looking for, but that's the truth. You know, we didn't perform against Cork that day. We were extremely disappointed, as you know, as a team and individually. And you know, I don't think Derek's not one to go back to, you know, bad days, I suppose. And you know, he'll reinforce what kind of positive things like that happened in the previous three games that we did win.
Yeah, talk to us about the Tadhg Na Bhfirca thing then, because you didn't know until very late on Thursday night. How did you handle it, or did you have the team named on the basis that he might play or he might not play? I'm sure, you know, you had everything kind of covered.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, we two or three scenarios, as in, and then obviously we got to work Friday morning. Yeah, it was Friday morning.
Yeah, night,
so we got a message Friday morning saying, so, and we trained Friday night and the team was named. So, look, you know, you didn't want the Queen to just park the thing because it was, you know, it was very difficult for Tuig and for the, I can only imagine the work that the lads put in behind the scenes. And, you know, Derek and the guys, you know, they wouldn't even tell us, but I'm led to believe it was massive. And, you know, it was a difficult situation. I think we handled it well, and, you know, Tuig handled it extremely well. And it was just, you know, it was a lot of that today was for him, because he's been, you know.
Would he have been vocal in the dressing room before the game, or would he have done much talking, or is he a talker anyways?
Not necessarily, but he'd be, you know, he'd be in for just such a cool-headed guy, and, you know, puts, you know, he's transformed, you know, gives everything to to us all, really. And he's just, you know, he's just a really good guy. Very quiet, probably not vocal. You know, doesn't need instruction, doesn't probably give instruction, but just, yeah, super operator.
Because you have to say Dara Fives was sensational as a sweeper as well, so you've got plenty of options there as sweepers now. Now Tig was the sweeper the whole time before. Now, you know, Dara can do it if
he can. Yeah, I know he can, yeah. Look, he's just a fantastic hurler. Two very similar hurlers, actually. And, yeah, look, I won't talk about that word sweepers, but...
it's banned from your friends.
No, but, look, you know, the boys are fantastic. They're, as I said, they're quite similar players, quite similar personalities, and, you know, really good stick men, really good in the air, and, you know, good athletes. So, it's brilliant, you know.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
Come here, I will have to bring up the Austin Gleeson thing in the first half, because, like, I mean, it's going to be highlighted tonight, I'm sure. It was highlighted at halftime today. There was interference with helmet again.
Yeah.
Like, it looked like there wasn't much in it because he was sitting on the ground. Austin wasn't really looking in his direction. But, like, yeah. I mean, it seems to be this reoccurring issue over and over again.
Yeah, I know. I don't know. I didn't see the situation. I'm sure the lads will look after that aspect, but it's, you know, it seems to be too much in the media at the moment. You know, I think there was, you know, way more things that need to be talked about that happened out there and things like that. But it's just, look, it's everywhere at the moment, and it's, as players, it can be frustrating, I suppose. But look, we'll see what happens. Obviously, hopefully nothing will be done like a man too. We were called it last week, so So look, I didn't see it, or don't know over the ins and outs of it, but it is, you know, it's kind of, I think everyone's getting a little bit sick of the whole thing.
A little bit, yeah. And just, you mentioned that you were talking to Conor Gleeson in the restroom there. I'm sure he's devastated. Like, there was only 2 minutes left. You know, he probably knows himself he shouldn't have got involved in something like that.
Yeah. Again, look, didn't see it. Don't know. We might have a chance if I don't know if it. Looking back on the video, what happened, I'm sure Derek and the guys will take every avenue if he has a chance, but I genuinely don't know. But obviously the chap is inconsolable a small bit, you know. He's you know, he's been a super player for us all year, a really, really underrated player. He was fantastic on the hand.
Brilliant on the hand, yeah.
He was, and, you know, chipped in, you know, he's a great guy as well, and hardy as they come. But look, you know, I suppose, like after the Wexford game with the Tig situation, there was a little damper in Parky Creeve that day, likewise a little bit today with the Connors thing. But look, you never know, and look, we'll leave it to the guys to see what they can do.
Yeah, okay, listen, Kevin, thanks very much for taking the time.
Cheers.
Thanks,
mate.
Yeah, I was talking to Kevin Moran there, Dan. He's doesn't have his going out clothes on him. You don't have that same problem. Myself and Brick and Noel Connors are gone in their shorts and t-shirts. You've got the glad rags on.
Yeah, but when they've done what I've done, well, I'm Jacob on their jeans. But no, it's another lads are there. The two lads you mentioned there are serious lads. Like, you know, so they are. Like, you know, I'd say they'll put them on later on, so they will. But they'll just enjoy the dinner there and don't get the recovery, and after that they'll see what they do. I think that's a women too, I have two, don't get me wrong, but some of the lads in there are dressed up and go tonight and enjoy tonight. We won't get carried away, Colin, to be honest with you. As we said inside, the lads can enjoy tonight. Like, you know, we don't get to these teams, like, you know, I said, you know, we played it before, so we have to let the boys out because they're athletes as well, so they know what my body's intended to stop.
Exactly. I saw you on the sideline with Derek, and it wasn't until the fourth goal went in that you were able to embrace him and be able to relax and say, well, okay, we have it now at this stage.
I've been around a long time for them to get carried away, like, you know, even with 5 points up, a goal below, but if it had 2 points in it, like, you know, so when you see the fourth goal going in, like, you know, and who gets it, Jamie Barron, you know, it's unbelievable. It takes a bit of pressure off us because, like, we've been there 4 years now, Cullum and Derek and myself have been through a lot with systems and this thing and that thing, and being knocked by playing this and playing that way, like, you know, or vice versa, whatever it is, like, you know. So we took a bit of criticism. It's great. We're in an Ireland final. We compete in 2 months in the finals. So we won a league title. We got to league 2 league finals, won league 1. Now we're in an Ireland finals. It's not bad for a sweeper system or a defensive system, like, you know. But again, it's the way we want to play. It's the way we're winning games, and why change it?
I don't think people probably realise the pressure you had on yourselves to go that step further this year and get to the final, you know, because you had been beaten in three semi-finals that you needed to push on.
Yeah, I would agree, Colin, as in, you know, to get to the semi-finals and play well and lose is not good enough. Like, you know, I'd rather play bad and win, if you know what I'm saying, to do that. But look, again, our lads have took a lot of punishment there, being beaten by Kilkenny by a point or two over the years, and getting mauled by Tipperary in the Munster final. They've taken on the chin, being beaten by Cork this year in a championship. They know they didn't perform. They came up today to perform, and by God, they did perform.
They did. Were you worried when, after the sending off, it looked like you could push on? But Cork responded to that really well.
They did. They got 2 or 3 points on the try, I think so, and they did. And that's a credit to Cork. But I just felt with when Dean went off that it created more space for us forwards, and I can assure you we have little forwards that can finish ball when they get the space.
And when Ellis went on Gleeson, he took over then and he was able to get that bit of freedom, whereas he was being man marked by McDonald the whole game.
And Steve McDonald did a great job. Yes, Austin got 1-2 or 1-3.
Yeah.
So it's one of his better games. But that's up to us in the management to get the best out of Austin, like, you know. And he'll be grand. He's under a lot of pressure from the accolades he won last year, like, you know. But yeah, he's competing, he's coming out every game, giving it his best. And so he is, and that's all we can ask from everyone, Cullen, as in give it 120%. That's all we ask for. Work hard. If we're beaten by a better team and we work hard, we've no complaints. We worked hard around Cork today. So we did. We had an issue with Tighe. We said we'd do it for Tighe, and I said to the boys that we'd do it for Derek. He's there now 4 years and we owed him a performance, and we did it today.
Is that what you played on during the week, was for Tighe? Well, you had to wait till Thursday night, really.
We kind of planned without Tighe in, because we knew if the appeal didn't go our way that he wouldn't be there. But again, that man has been immense since I came in there, Tighe Burke, and to see a man for very little, the offence was why he did for very little, and to suspend and miss a game like that today, like, no, he's lucky we're back in Ireland finals. Probably get the game the next day.
Well, something needs to be done about this helmet thing now, because the Austin Gleeson was highlighted at half time in the game about an incident with that as well. You think it's taken over?
That's a good point, Colin, but who's highlighting these things? You know what I mean? Like, you know, why? The ref didn't see it, the linesman didn't see it, so why highlight it?
Yeah.
So I'm saying, why drag controversy on Austin now, or whoever it is, next, or they put Toohey for it, even Toohey from God. Why drag all this stuff?
Well, the Sunday game last week said they were highlighting it because Waterford and Cork fans were texting in about it, which was a strange one.
It's hard to know, like, you know why they do this. Why don't you just comment on the game and do what they're good at, you know, and leave the other stuff to their professionals, like, you know, and. Well, I didn't see any incident, if I'm being honest. I didn't see Conor Gleeson, and I won't tell you right, but why highlight these things? Why then can't they just talk about the matches and the scores, or the runs the lads make, or the blocks the lads make at half time and full time, and leave the other stuff to the other lads?
Yeah, it does seem to be like an incident based analysis rather than talking about it.
You know, I wonder if there's someone else from a bigger county would have been an issue.
Yeah, it's difficult to know. Listen, best of luck in the final, Dan.
Thanks very much.
It's tough. I won't tell you, there's no point in papering over like that. It is extremely tough. I won't tell you, but again, it's not about me or Morris or anyone else. It's about Waterford.
We've waited so long. I know I seen one of your tweets yesterday. It said 6 years. It's a leash, man, but it's a long 6 years for us there, and we're absolutely thrilled.
I remember after we reached the final, I was just through the morning. My nephew was out in the lawn and he was faking freeze with his socks pulled up, pretending to be TJ Reid, and fairly brought me back down to earth that day anyway.
Reading Nicky English in the Irish Times today, JJ, and he said Waterford always looked more comfortable in the Croke Park setting of an All-Ireland semi-final. Is that fair to say? I kind of agree with that statement. Yeah. They kind of did.
They did, and it looked more comfortable. The game was played on Waterford's terms as well, in regarding with their sweeper system, with the way they set up. All the game against Kilkenny then was, again, Waterford played it on their terms. Again, against Wexford, obviously the two teams mirrored each other. It's just Waterford were longer down the road playing that system. And I thought there yesterday now, Waterford just dictated from minute one, they went to play the sweeper system, and they dictate the terms on their terms as well. And they were so comfortable playing as well. I thought now Tadhg Burke would be a huge loss, but Darragh Fives came in and played that position very, very well. I heard an interview after the match, and he played a few games in the league, so they obviously had a plan B just in case what was going to happen. He was always going to go in there as well. But the fairness to Dermot McGrath, he got his matchups 100% right there. He learned from the Munster Championship games there as well, and because Noel Connors was always getting the better of Patrick Horgan got the better of him in the Munster Championship, and then to put Noel Connors on Alan Cadigan, and he kept him very, very quiet, and Conor Gleeson got out, and Conor Lehan was a master.
That was a good matchup,
yeah, because even in the second half, Conor Lehan was running down the wing, and he usually burns people, and he can actually stop, well, not kind of slow down and take the shot at the goal, but Conor Gleeson was right behind him as well. And then I say he was probably rattled after that, because he knew his speed is his key component there as well, and he usually burns a lot of people, but Conor Gleeson was able to stay with him, and he was just spoiling him, getting the ball away from him, and he had all was had Darragh Fives there on his shoulder as well, like, passing back the ball as well. But I thought Waterford now dictated from minute one in regard to their tactics and their matchups, and physicality was huge as well.
Yeah, what we saw mostly here, Paddy, between the last day was Waterford, for some reason in Thurles that day, I think it could have been the weather, the 11-week gap, they were uncharacteristically flat. The intensity that we associate with them, the tackling, the hooking, that middle third battle zone, that wasn't there, but it was definitely there in Croke Park. And when they have that, then obviously the spare man to have at the back works, because he mops up all that loose ball, you know, from aimless clearances, because the lads outside are under so much pressure.
Yeah, I think it was similar to Tip, and a lot of teams, like when you've been to a lot of All-Ireland semi-finals, you've been trying, knocking on the door. When you get back to playing a Munster or a Leinster semi-final or final, first game of the year, although your management or the players might talk into how up for it you are, sometimes it's impossible. You're still on a hangover from the year before. You're so far away from where you know you should be playing, which could be an All-Ireland semi-final, that coming in against a team like Cork and Thurles, who are mad for any win, they were probably up for every Waterford Crystal game, probably up for every league game, and certainly up for the Munster Championship, that much can really just overpower you on the day. And I thought their lack of energy and intensity was the key thing that day. Look, everything else falls from that. It's like in rugby, when the forwards get on top, or one team's more physical than the other, then the other team can play their hurling.
Yeah.
So that's what happened in the Munster Championship. I thought they got so on top physically, Cork, that they were able to spray ball wherever they wanted. Now we saw yesterday Waterford were up first. They wanted to be in the All-Ireland semi the same way. They had the burning hunger that Cork had, and then it was a different game. We just saw, I really liked, they got the matchups right at the back, which is fair enough, right? You'd be expecting. But I liked what they did. They put Brick Walsh out in Coleman.
That was a great move, yeah.
Instead of Mark Coleman coming forward from his own 65 on the front foot, banging balls across or picking out men short, a lot of the time he was running back towards his own 21 to pick ball up. Then he'd have to play it out to a less dangerous midfielder who was going to hit it in. Or else, what I really liked was Brick was taking him across the field near his own 21. Big balls in on top from making runs. Now, I'm sure that was Derek McGrath saying, look, I want you to do that, but it took some player in Brick Walsh to get a player of Coleman's confidence at the minute to actually come into his world, and I thought that was one of the key matchups in the first half.
Yeah, he brought him straight into his world. And like, I mean, we talked last Thursday on the podcast, myself, Damien and Conal, about, you know, these young Waterford lads are great players, but they still look up to Kevin Moran and Brick Walsh, and they take their lead off them. And that's the whole cliche about having leaders, and it's not a cliche for no reason. That's players look up to certain players. And when you have Kevin Moran and Brick Walsh scoring 1-3 of 1-7 in the first half, setting that tone, they still need them so much, and they really answered yesterday. Like, I mean, like Paddy says, Brick Walsh gave Coleman all sorts of trouble, bullied them, and Kevin Moran took Bill Cooper to the cleaners in that first half.
He did, yeah. Kevin Moran had a big point to prove now as well. Bill Cooper got the better of him again. One of the matchups that Cork got better of him in that back down the Munster Championship, physically he dominated him, but come minute one there, yesterday, Kevin Moran was up for the game. He's flying all over the field. He actually got in a lot of tackles there as well, but the two guys just run themselves into ground for the Waterford cause, and they know they're going to spring. Derek McGrath knows they're going to spring the bench there in the second half there as well. But they've done absolutely fabulous as well, in fairness. And Brick Welch, you have to admire the man. But what he's been through, where he played, he's not a natural forward. He was centre back midfield, and now he's up in the forwards. But still to do what he's doing, and still to be able to, even to number one, to be togging out there, but even just to dominate a young hurler, a young, very, very good hurler that no one could touch in the Munster Championship so far. He's in running for Young Player of the Year and All-Star there as well, but he just kind of physically dominated him. He imposed his game on top of Mark Coleman there as well, and Mark Coleman wasn't comfortable, but he still had the ability to score as well, like, you know what I mean. There's a bit of cuteness as well out of Brick. He didn't go follow Mark Coleman in, he stepped back out the 21, and actually Shane Bennett popped him over, an absolutely fabulous ball there as well, like, you know.
And it was a bit of inexperience from Coleman getting sucked into that play, because, like, I mean, Shane Bennett had two lads on him, you know. He had just gotten in, but, like, I mean, if you're on Brick Walsh, you probably should be kind of taking care of him, and he got sucked in, and he gave that,
you know, wonder why Cork didn't move maybe Mark Ellis back, he was a sweeper, and move him over because he would be physically strong, or even Christopher Joyce, move him back over because he'd be physically strong as Brick Welsh. You can wrestle him in the air, because that's when Brick Welsh was troubling Mark Holman up in the air, and he's winning a lot of ball off him, and then they had runners off Brick Welsh there as well, like, you know. So he's surprising they didn't switch over, and then that spare man could have suited Mark Holman down to the ground as well.
Yeah, we were saying on Thursday that Coleman, we were predicting that they probably wouldn't put Coleman as the sweeper because he's been doing so well and he's so young. But Coleman's a perfect sweeper because he's so smart and uses the ball so well that you would think that maybe might have been an option, Paddy.
Well, I think they probably need to be a bit more flexible. But I know playing in back lines, when your back line is going quite solid, you generally, people don't like to think of it. Certainly management don't, because they feel that the communication and the pattern of play is going well for the last three games. We're steady here, this is an All-Ireland semi. Are we really going to change around the whole thing? Like prior to the sending off, it was a pretty even game. They're up by a point. So I can see why they wouldn't. But at the same time, Mark Holman is their weapon. He was the man who was feeding the full forward line and the half forward line through the Munster Championship. You'd see actually that Christopher Joyce probably got on a good bit more ball yesterday, but the difference is he won't do the damage going forward, and neither will Ellis, probably won't either, because they don't have that unbelievable low trajectory stick pass that the full forward line of Cork probably needs. You know, I know Pat Horgan went well, but the two balls that Cadogan got, you know, two of those balls in space. And look, Cadogan is a player, he needs good service, and he's the best in the country nearly when he gets good service. But if he doesn't get it, he's not going to win too many breaks off big men. He's not going to win too many high balls, because that's his function in there. It's ball hitting the grass coming in, he's going to take it and he's going to burn it every time. But they really nullified that, but it was from 100 yards away.
Yeah, and like, I mean, we have to talk about the sending off here, lads, because, like, I mean, to say it didn't have a bearing on the game would be crazy. It had a massive bearing on the game. Like, it was in the 51st minute and Cork were a point up. So after that foul then, Pádraig Mahony sticks over the free to bring it back level, and then Horgan shoots 2 points to put Cork two clear. So it looked like Cork rallied. So that might make people think, oh, well, the sending off didn't have a bearing. Yeah. But then after that, Waterford shot 3-6 to 2 points.
Yeah, that was a huge turning point, because after that sending off, Waterford were running down through the middle of the Cork defence there as well. See, Jamie Barron was always going for midfield. Austin Gleeson went in for his goal there as well, like, you know. But yeah, it was a huge thing. But look, to be honest, I don't think he can have any argument with it. Definitely, the first one was a definite yellow. Second one was a close line. It was a high tackle, so that was a second yellow card there as well. But probably a tackle that he didn't have to make. But when your adrenaline is going, you're pumping, you want to get your team, the ball back to your team as much as possible. It was a bit awkward, really, more than intentionally going to kind of hit the man. It was just an awkward tackle, but unfortunately it was a second yellow and it was a red card now.
Yeah, now, like, I suppose, geez, I don't want to get back into that, but, like, I mean, it was probably dangerous, but it was a yellow rather than this thing. Yeah. Every high tackle is a red, and we are not, you know, giving referees any kind of way of making up their own mind on it. Like, I mean, one of the big things, Paddy, that stood out to me when Cathalan got sent off is that McDonald had been marking Gleeson, and I'm not sure who he went off to mark, but Gleeson ended up on Mark Ellis, and Gleeson took Ellis to the cleaners in the last 15 minutes.
Well, yeah, but it is very, very difficult when you're down to 14 and you're used to playing a certain style all match of being a sweeper, and now you're pushing up. But he also had to mind the full-back line as well, because Morris came on. Morris was on a man who wasn't able for him in the air. Yeah. So now you're thinking, do I have to sit back as well? So there was extra space there. And if you give us, I think Gleeson needs to be man marked. Like, so that's, for me, that's a given. If I was playing centre-back, no matter where he goes, I'd probably follow him and hope the two wing-backs do a lot of sweeping and covering him behind. And when then Mark Ellis had the choice to make, mid-match, I'm sure there was no chat about it, about what he'd do, because he thought he'd be sweeper, then it becomes a very, very difficult task. The only other point I'd say there, Waterford make Park very uncomfortable. See, the two fouls that Catalan gave away, both out the field, one of them running back towards his own goals, the other one he was out at midfield. It just shows how comfortable Waterford were and how out of their own comfort zone Cork were at times. And just shows, made a man give away, I'd say, 2,000 in the whole game. He probably didn't get on much ball himself, and he was drawn into a red card. So Waterford were, you know, even before that, I think, were making the Cork backs very, very uncomfortable.
Yeah, moving them all over the pitch. But even having said that, though, like, I mean, I know there was a bit of extra space, but it was still five backs on five forwards. It's not like Waterford had an extra man up in forwards. Like, I mean, like, should five against five be that much different than six on five, or even six? Like, without any sweepers, it's six on six.
Yeah.
And it can be a tight game. So you're only taking one pair out of there. So it's five on five. And Waterford were able to run amok with five. Because when Waterford play a sweeper, you know, the sending off wouldn't have as big a bearing maybe as a team that doesn't play a sweeper and leaves their spare man out around the midfield maybe or something.
But the only issue is when you're playing with a sweeper, you can man mark and you can take a chance. You can actually go attack the ball a small bit more because you know he's going to go in behind you. He's going to be where the ball is, so you can actually take a chance on that. I think the Cork backs now after that, and another aspect was they were pumping high ball back into the wall for sweepers' hands. Darragh Fyfe came out with a load of ball in that last 15 minutes and Waterford were on the tack, but they weren't pumping high ball back down. They were going through the lines. Conor Gleeson was giving it to Jamie Barron, or Colin Dunford came on, and they were running from midfield. Like, you know, it's very, very hard tracking. If you run it from midfield, you break the half back line, your full back line is completely exposed. You've no sweeper there, you've nothing there. So it was a case of Waterford to use their cuteness, use their game plan, and it worked to a treat for them. Like, they weren't hitting high, long, hopeful ball. They were working through the lines and breaking the tackle and going straight through.
It's amazing being at the game, the lift the Waterford crowd got to the few Nash puckouts that went out over the line, Paddy. Like, I mean, I saw Derek McGrath, he celebrated a couple of them.
He caught one of them.
Yeah.
He was jumping up and down when he caught one of the line.
It's almost like Nash is near Cluxton, kind of, maybe not at that level, but like, I mean, you set, like, if you, because he's so good at it, if he one or two go astray and you kind of suss one or two out, it gives teams a huge lift.
That's it, sure. We pinpointed here, and I'm sure it didn't take a mastermind to pinpoint it, that their puck outs were fantastic in the last three matches. But what happens when you get on top of those? And obviously, by the reaction of Derek McGrath, it's something that they really pinpointed. And they made him. And as well as that, I often heard Brendan Cummins talking before that it's a lot different pucking a ball out in Cork Park than it is in a provincial ground. That there's something about it that it can, the ball can go over the sideline a lot easier. That he often picked the billboard behind the goals to be his aim when he's hitting it. So it is obviously more difficult. So Cork were in a more uncomfortable situation than they had been. But they got on top of it, and it just showed how less. They were able to get Morton Lehane. We know he's their big player up front. He really drags defence all over the place. And if you can stop that, then you're stopping it. And interesting enough, Callan didn't get many. When the sharp puckouts were going, he didn't get many of the sharp puckouts either. It was going to Splann, that who mightn't have been as comfortable on it. And it just showed they just didn't get that running game. They didn't get the smooth ball into the forward line that they usually had. So they were pulled into a wrestling match. And I suppose Waterford, in fairness, like, I would have given out a good bit about the sweeper system, but I think it's because they drag so many men back with the sweeper. It's not just the sweeper,
no,
it's usually loads. They were a little bit more offensive the last day, yesterday. And as well as that, I would have said the last year that they've been just pumping balls up into the forward line a lot. I would have said that would have been a big trait and what you shouldn't be doing with a sweeper. But yesterday, their stick passing was fantastic. They're moving off the ball, it was brilliant. They were popping it. So, like, I saw Don Lowe giving out yesterday to Henry and whoever, and I thought it was a bit out of place, because if the sweeper is played with one man back, it's not so bad. If you use the ball, it's not so bad. But what Waterford were doing was playing with very little energy, just dragging a load of men back not to concede scores and driving it up the field. And I think that's when the sweeper is totally not going to work and it's totally ineffective. So I thought that point was a little bit off the mark.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I mean, when I think, in fairness, Henry Shefflin and these few lads had carte blanche to criticise these systems, you know, the whole way through the championship, and there was nobody really given the other side of it. Whereas Don Logan's been involved in Clare before, he's been involved with Davy, and he understands this, and he was able to give the other side of it, which I thought was nice to see Don Logan putting it up to them. Because usually when you have pundits giving out, because all the traditionalist pundits seem to hate this sweeper, and you're right, Paddy, it's not a sweeper, it's everything that goes with the sweeper. It's the intensity in the middle third, and without that intensity in the middle third, the sweeper wouldn't get on as much ball as he does. So to call it just a sweeper system is too simplistic altogether. It's a whole defensive system, maybe.
Yeah.
But I thought Waterford did use the ball an awful lot better. That was a criticism I'd always have of them. But their skill, though, I don't think Waterford get enough credit for their skill. They'll give the ball to each other along the ground, a scuttery pass, under pressure, and the Barons and all these lads are taking it up into the hand without miscontrol. Like, the skill levels to play that close game that they play. I think that needs to be pointed out.
Yeah, if you're going to play that game, I'd say every club in the whole country, I'll try to play it at one particular time, but it can break down because one bad touch, one bad pass, the crowd gets on top of you and that's it. But again, I suppose if they learned a huge amount from that Cork match and they learned what big thing was, the identity of what for hurling was, that's the way they were going to go, and they weren't going to apologise for it anymore. They were kind of half apologising coming up to that, but after that Cork match, they said, look, this is the way we're going to go, and we don't care what you say or what anyone else says. But the thing about it is, he trusts his players to do it, and he trusts the players' ability to do that as well. Like, you know, and they had a complete performance there yesterday as well for it, but again they're going to have to up it by another 10-15% when it comes to the All-Ireland final.
Yeah, they probably will. And listen, we're going to get into a bit of analysis of all the goals and all the brilliant performances in performance of the weekend, but first, because Derek McGrath, we don't usually give managers performance of the weekend, but Derek McGrath, geez, he deserves so much credit here, Paddy. Like, I mean, you look at what he's after doing. He's after getting a crowd of young fellas to an All-Ireland final. Like, I mean, there's a lot of teams go, you can't win with that many young fellas. How many of those fellas won an under-21 last year? He didn't put any stock into the league this year. He rotated in the quarter-final against Galway because he said, look, last 2 years they felt that they didn't peak for the business end of the championship in the semi-final. This year he did it all different. He said, right, I don't really care that I'm out of the league early, and he wanted to peak for around now. And like, I mean, if ever a plan just came together in that last 15 minutes, they were the energetic ones, they were hit on top of the ground. And Derek, that's all Derek McGrath's planning, you know, and the system is his planning, and he gets an awful lot of criticism because of this system, and I think it's very unfair. When you actually break down what Derek McGrath has done with that county since he's taken over, has been nothing short of phenomenal.
Yeah, well, he had to deal with an awful lot of absences off that team. I remember when Derek McGrath took over and the first few teams he put out, I think they played, was it Offaly Leeson ran through against Cork when he just ran through and put in top corner?
Yeah, he did.
I hadn't a clue of 8 or 9 of their starting players. Hadn't a clue. And then I hear they're all 20 years of age, 21, 19. And I think after that year, a lot of people in Watford kind of wanted him out. So he's dealing with a lot of pressure down there when there hasn't been much success in the county. Okay, purple period in the noughties there with getting close to All-Ireland, but there hasn't been a lot going on there for a long time, and he has had to deal with a lot of pressure. And no more myself, I was looking at him this year saying he's under a lot of pressure because he's going from sleeper, he's come back to Orthodox, sleeper Orthodox, lack of energy promoted to the league, that was critical, and a lack of energy in the Munster Championship. The only time they had energy in all that time was when they did rotate the players and against Galway. Actually, that was their best performance.
Yeah.
But he stuck what he knows, and he did take a chance because the confidence can suffer, and you can go through the season and be waiting to peak and it might never happen, and you can get bet and you're just knocked out. But in fairness, he's got it right. He's got the, you know, he's got the juices flowing, I think, which is the most important, at the right time with the Waterford team. They're up for it, they're pumped, they can see the end line now, and I'd say they know that this probably is their best chance. Even though, look, Galway are a fantastic team, but this probably is their best chance right now. They're on the road 3-4 years with him. They probably need to get the job done now.
Yeah, JJ, it was a massive risk, really. That's a nice way of putting it, because he could have ended up with egg on his face.
Could have very, very easily, but you have to admire the man. But I'd say Derek was probably being that team that he has now, was probably being judged what the team was back in the 2000s, the likes of Ken McGrath and Paul Flynn, John Milan, all these lads. They probably have better individuals back then as what they are now, but they actually have a better team now and a better system now to play. And it's
Kilkenny's not around.
But it was kind of a thing that he was probably being judged against that, them teams were come off probably one every 50-60 years with all them players come at once, and they were fantastic to watch and they were just playing off the cuff. But he probably looked, he judged his players, and this is the system, this is the game of hurling that he wants to see and be played, and this is the system that he actually 100% obviously backs, and that's why he wants to instill in these players. But the players bought into that then as well. It doesn't care. A manager can tell you what they want to do, but if the players don't buy into it 100%, it's going to break down, and actually to go out of their way to make it break down, because again, once it goes onto the field, the work is done. But if the players don't buy into it, and in the heat of battle again there yesterday, they believed in it, they're still playing the way they were playing, they got the goals in the last 10-15 minutes, but they believed that they were going to get them goals. So it's a huge credit for Derek McGrath.
Yeah, it's fairly obvious. Like, I mean, he scores 4-19 Waterford do. They concede no goals against Cork, conceded 20 points, no goals. So, like, I mean, you're shutting down the opposition getting any goals. You're scoring 419 yourself. You're keeping it very, very tight in the first half. Like, I mean, you're never going to be out of the game. Then halfway through the second half, you'll bring Morris on. You'll bring some fresh legs on already tired defenders, and then you'll start running at them down the middle with Barron, who could probably play three matches in a row and not slow down. Yeah. Austin Gleeson, all these fellas. So, like, I mean, it's not rocket science what he's doing, Paddy, but it's very, very effective, and it works for them. And like, in my opinion, I don't see why that should be criticised.
Well, it shouldn't. If it's played like it is on Sunday, I have no issue. I don't mind. One extra man back is never going to be a big issue on you going forward. If you said five forwards is loads, but when you have, you know, three forwards up, that's when I find the issue. Now, yesterday, when it was down to Cork, the layoff weren't able to get in their faces to make them drive it long, but they were able to stick past the ball. They actually spread it lovely, I thought they used the wings well, and then they had the runners through the middle. Bennett up front is after improving. I see what JJ is talking about with him now. He's after improving a lot in the last few games, so they are coming, and they're peaking at the right time. But when it was played before, I think, you know, if you're looking at it and evaluating, I wouldn't feel bad evaluating it negatively like we did, because the way it was being played, I don't think there was a way of winning it, you know. But with Waterford, if they get a goal or two, that's the beauty of what the system that they're playing. If they do get a goal and the other team then are gone, perfectly a goal, then you start lording it down. That's when they'll really run you back up the field, and they'll bring everybody back, and they'll create oceans of space. And that's what they did yesterday. They got a little bit ahead of Cork, and as you saw, Cork had to push up against them. Then you have Jamie Barron coming in behind, you have Austin Gleeson coming in behind them, space everywhere, and that's where they can hurt you. If Galway concede a goal or two to Waterford early in the All-Ireland final, or if they get ahead 4, 5, 6 points, they're going to find it very, very hard to beat them.
Yeah, and an incredible stat. We don't want to get into this Waterford Galway preview, because I'm really looking forward to that show. 10 championship meetings, all 10 Waterford won, which is beyond belief. Like, I can't wait for that. But we'll leave it there, lads. We'll be back with performance of the weekend.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we have a farm back home, so we have a big farm back home, and we have cattle and sheep, and we have a few donkeys as well. So we had a couple of filly donkeys. So I brought them down, and so we did. We actually sold them to. I think I had four donkeys on the day, and we sold them to a man from Wexford. So we did. So there's the piebald donkey still there, and there's the traditional donkey, and there's the Spanish donkey, and then there's the
Spanish donkey.
They call it. Yeah, you see them on the beaches, and so yeah, you can actually one time the donkey was useless, right? But now some people have started to get back into them, because you can use them for headage, and it's used towards your bonuses, your grants. A donkey in Eden, a donkey needs a palace.
All right, lads, performance of the weekend. Only one game, lads, but there was loads of outstanding performers. And I want to start off with Austin Gleeson. I love Austin Gleeson. I think anyone who's listened to the podcast knows that I think Austin Gleeson is just the main man. It was actually a very similar performance to Joe Canning's the week before, in that wasn't in the game. MacDonald did a great marking job on him. I was actually very surprised they didn't put Spillane on him when he'd done so well on him the game before that. That was a strange one. But then when Gleeson was needed, and, well, I'd say the sending off helped him, because he was on Ellis, who's a natural centre back. Mm. And you can just see the damage Gleeson can do on a lad that's not man marking him all the time. Being man marked is a horrible experience. For hurling and football, if you're marking a fella who's no interest in getting into the game, only marking you, very rarely lads get into the game in those scenarios. But his pass, his dispossession of Joyce, and his pass was sensational. What he did for the goal, JJ, like, I mean, it's incredible how he did all that so fast. I thought he overcarried it, but looking at it back, he didn't. And even when he got the ball first, did he do a chop down to actually fool, like, to get it into his hand in the first place? I think he sold another Cork defender initially. But then he went to throw it. He showed it. He went to a fake a hand pass. Now, he should have hand passed it.
He should have hand passed it.
Absolutely. But I don't know what it's like to be Austin Gleeson. And when you see that, there's no way he was ever given that.
No, he's going to back himself on it, wasn't he?
But what did he do? Like, he faked a hand pass it, then he threw it onto his hurl, faked to go another way and then brought it back.
Brought it back then, yeah.
My God, like that, all that's happening so fast with three men around him.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely unbelievable. I think the dispossession for Jamie Barron's goal was very, very, very disciplined. Conor Dace was coming out. Easy thing was to hit him a shot, knock him back with a free out.
He waited.
He waited because Conor Dace had started actually going backwards then. He'd gone back into his own corner. Austin Gleeson knew what he had to do. He had to throw it up sometime, flicked it away, and he passed over a great ball. But yeah, the second goal was just all about him. Like, you know, he got the ball in the middle, straight through the middle. I'm presuming the Cork defence, looking back on it, will be very, very, they wouldn't be happy with themselves, because one out of three should have come out and absolutely met him at the 21, outside the 21, because, or else made him make the hand pass, you know. But they didn't make the decision for him. Austin Gleeson backed himself, and as what you said, he just danced through the two or three defenders, and it was a great finish as well. If he had a went for a full strike, he would have been hooked, but he had the whereabouts to know where he was, knew his surroundings, little flick into the corner as well. Like, you know, it's absolutely great finish.
Yeah, I didn't even mention the finish, Paddy. That little tap, underhanded tap when you're through. So he's done all that skill, all in the blinking of an eye, with lads around him, and then to have the composure to go, here, I'm not going to get hooked. And like, I mean, I don't know how all this stuff can be computing in his head as he's running at that speed, to just calm everything down, not get hooked, and bat it underhanded into the net then.
Yeah, he's like a video game, like a street hurler. He's he can do things that nobody, I don't think anybody, we've seen anybody do things that he can do. And I don't know, when we see, well, you'll probably see a lot of kids that now, you know, it's like when Joe Kenning came on the scene and the sidelines are popping over, you see people will probably be able to solo while they're amazing around the place. And he has an unbelievable gift. And that finish, your man was even trying to block him, he just flicked it into the corner. Probably, and it's not something you practice, it's just something he's able to do. And as JJ said, I, you know, if I was on his team, I'd be roaring at him to get the hand pass, but it's probably what makes him, you know.
Yeah.
That the reason he has such good ability is the reason he'd back himself to flick that ball in. He probably sees it different than other people. So, but the only thing I'd say, if I was the Cork defenders, I'd be saying, right, Austin Gleeson likes to go himself, he backs himself every time, and he sold about two dummies. So I'd been questioned Cork full backline that they didn't quickly say to themselves, right, well, this lad needs to be stopped because he wants to put it in himself. But the skill was unbelievable. He turned both ways, and then Nash didn't even move, which was, you know, I mean, that just showed a lovely tidy little finish it was.
Yeah, because I suppose Nash would very rarely be beaten with that. Like, I'd say Nash was more surprised at the finish, the way he knocked it in, maybe. Yeah. You know, it was definitely a strange one. But like, I mean, I agree with you, Paddy. I've never in hurling seen lads do what Austin Gleeson does routinely, you know. Yeah, like, I mean, this lad, like a highlights reel there that would nearly take your breath away.
Yeah, he just plays off his own instinct. I don't think he thinks, he just does what he can do, and he's done it before, and he just plays off the cuff, plays an instinct game, and he's obviously, his instinct is very good, better than a lot of the rest of us now, to be honest.
Yeah, he scored, he ended up with 1-2, and like, I mean, like Joe Canning at half time would be saying. But another thing here quickly on Waterford lads, and you mentioned the timing of his tackle on Joyce, and we saw the timing of another tackle, I'm not sure who it was on, over underneath the stand where he knocked the ball away.
Yeah, Kieran Bennett.
Or was Kieran Bennett, and Austin Gleeson did it as well.
Yeah.
Are Waterford very good at not playing the man, but being patient and waiting until they actually throw the ball up? Like, I mean, I see Brick Walsh is brilliant at waiting, and just as you're trying to scoop it up, that's when he'll flip. You know what I mean? Are Waterford particularly good at that? Or
they must do a lot of drills in regard to tackling drills, because if you look at their game, it's all about the middle third is just to swamp that and get as many players around it as possible as well. So you have to be disciplined in the tackle as well. You can't be getting up bodies around the ball and going with a flick and you play the hurl or something and give a free in, a handy free in. Like, you know, so they must do a lot of work on it, because around that middle third, they're very, very good at dispossession, and then when they do, they have the whole thing sucked in, and then they can go at pace then as well. They can break through tackles and pace.
Yeah, have you noticed that, Paddy, that they're particularly good at the discipline tackling?
It was huge last year, anyway, I noticed it. But said a lot of drilling in that. But the players themselves, a lot of experience has gone into it over the last years. And like, when you're tackling, it's always a problem solving, because sometimes you need to just put your arms out and hold them up. Sometimes you can see them coming for the shoulder, so you have them, you know, meet them with a shoulder, and you can drive them back. And then other times, they're running. So as he did with the last flick off the hurley, Joyce, he had him under pressure. Then he saw him going backwards and he said, if I play my cards right here, I can flick it off his hurley, because he hadn't much more ground joist to work with. So he had him in a corner and he knew he could flick it. So it's that element of knowing when to keep the head, when to just use your hurley to take the ball away, and then other times you have to just throw your whole body in. So I think that's the biggest thing that people don't get with tackling, that sometimes a lot of people just jump in 100% all the time, but they use their head more than they used anything for yesterday.
Yeah, because just from Gaelic football, which my background is, you always see players running in when your fella has the ball in his hands and they go in with a big fist trying to knock it out of his hands. Mm. When that's not the right thing to do at all. If you're just patient for two more steps, he has to bounce it or tap it on his toe. And that's when you tackle him. But this kind of idea, I'll go in and I'll drive it out of his... Yeah, and it's illegal, a closed fist, to do that. But if you just use your head and run with him, he has to play it. But Waterford seemed to have that, down to a T. Discipline, really, and people think about discipline not hitting lads or not fouling, but that discipline in tackling properly is a huge skill that they should get credit for.
Yeah, and look, again, they're perfecting it as much as possible as well, but that's a huge thing about the timing of it, the discipline of it. When you're up, a lot of people just, when the lad has the ball, you're up on him, you hit him straight away. But again, it's what Jeff was saying, he has to play the ball. That's what Austin Gleeson did with Christopher Joyce. He's going back to his own goal. He knew he had to throw it up, flicked it away. Christopher Joyce is off balance, then he had the time to pick up the ball and pick out Jamie Barron. So these little things will turn games as well.
Yeah, no, I agree. Patrick Horgan, lads, stood up and was counted. He's my other nomination. I'll give you your nominations after that. He was outstanding, lads. He really showed up, because in fairness, Harnedy, Cadigan and Connerly Hahn were well marked and they didn't have the same impact on the game. Patrick Horgan definitely did. He scored 5 from play, 12 in total, which was a brilliant performance. Yeah. And he tried to kick a ball over the bar football style, which seemed to be just the most ball. I've never seen anything like that coming in on his left, wasn't it? Underneath
Swing
the hill.
Over, put the hill 16.
How did he think that was going to go over? But he was brilliant. And Patrick Horgan is after having an absolutely brilliant year and answering the critics, because we talked about him in Nolan Park.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he had been dropped that day and he came down and he didn't look like the happiest fella in the world. But number one, Kingston got it right with him, obviously, in hindsight. That's what he needed at the time, and he responded in the right way to that.
He did absolutely fabulous here now as well. And he's probably the one Cork forward that got on top of the Waterford back there as well. But he showed for every ball, and the ball wouldn't come in. There weren't actually ideal ball for him to win, but he still won it. That probably would have been a criticism of Patrick Horgan over the last few years. He had to kind of give him the ball when he did get the ball in hand. He's very, very difficult to dispossess, but looking back through the year, he had a fabulous year. And in fairness to me, he's one driving force for Cork All Day yesterday.
Yeah, no, he was right. Paddy, who do you nominate?
I just had Dara Fives there. I thought he was brilliant. He's stepping into a breach that was left by Tyke De Burke, who's fantastic. And then that big cloud was hanging over. And yourself now going in there, if Waterford had lost or underperformed, it's all Tyke De Burke was irreplaceable. So there's a bit of pressure standing in there, but he's been around the scene a long time, but he's had a lot of injuries, and he's a class hurler. So if you get Tyke De Burke in beside him there, I'm not sure what they'll do with it the next day. Will they switch back Tyke De Burke, or will they say, Tyke De Burke, you go centre back and five sweeper? Because I thought it was actually, their system was even smoother. So I don't know what that ain't got to do with it, but he popped out a lot of good balls to that. So he was brilliant. High balls and everything, he dominated.
Yeah, no, he did. He caught a few great balls at the end. He's been out injured for a while, the lads were all referencing. And a lot of lads wrote number 5 on their hands and all to do it for Tyke De Burke and stuff. And Dara Fives, number one, there's pressure to play in an All-Ireland semi-final, but number two, you're replacing this specialist in this position. Yeah. Talking about answering all that.
Everybody went to Croke Park yesterday to see who was playing sweeper and how he got on as well. So he would have been criticised if it didn't go well, but he had a great game yesterday, in fairness to him.
Who's your nomination, JJ?
Kevin Moran. I thought he had a fabulous game there yesterday. Ever since the Cork match in the Munster final, he's after growing into this championship. He had a great game against Michael Fenley inside, against Kilkenny as well, and he scored the winning goal against Wexford there as well in the quarter final. But yesterday I thought he was immense from start to when he was took off. He just ran himself into the ground. He was all over the field, took great scores on right and left, but he just drove it to Cork in the first half. I thought he was brilliant.
Yeah, and we haven't even mentioned Jamie Barron, lads, because he was the official man of the match after the game yesterday, and he's just a sensational player breaking forward. And can I just draw your attention to the fact that in our championship preview show, I tipped Jamie Barron at 50-1 for player of the year. Of course, I didn't back him. But I nominate him because he's such an all action player. But even Kevin Moran and Jamie Barron, Paddy, we'll deal with them together, because like I said to Kevin Moran there in the interview, their game is so suited to Waterford's style of play, and it's like Derek McGrath says, right, what kind of players do I have, what's going to work? And these two fellas, their work rate, their energy, like the way they're able to get onto that broken play, like I'm sure a lot of players are not really natural in that kind of environment, but these two lads just love that broken play and love getting involved in the tackling and all that stuff, and then breaking forward when they have license to do it as well.
Yeah, well, Barron, you know, is probably made for midfield in that game, because he can just go past you. He's lovely touch. He can get out of trouble. Do you know, the middle third is very congested for Waterford play, but his turn, nobody can deal with his sidestep or his cut. So, like, he is made for... I just think Moran has played in the forwards, he's played midfield, he's played halfback for Waterford, and it wouldn't matter what system, it wouldn't matter what manager, that man would be leading from the front. He's tough as nails, he's deceptively quick, and he's a lovely pair of hands, and it doesn't always look, you know, the most beautiful hurler, but he always gets the job done. Very reliable with his touch, very reliable scoring, rarely picks the wrong option. He's, you know, him and Brick together have been just, they've really brought the old Waterford team, and they've bridged the gap to what the new Waterford team is. They kept the hits of the young players, they kept them in a lot of matches, and look, they got their reward getting to the final, but they're both so suited. If one of them was lost out of that system now, you would be, you know, it'd be very, very hard to replace. It'd be probably harder than the likes of Ty DeBorca to replace, to be fair, because you need that bit of spark around the middle to go with the system. You need a little bit more than that.
Yeah, and just on that, lads, Noel Connors, I was joking with Kevin Moran when I was talking to him there. Kevin Moran was out underneath the dressing room. You see the Austin Gleesons and all these fellas, Jamie Barron's, all these lads have the glad rags on, they're ready for a good night out. Kevin Moran comes out in shorts and a training top, Noel Connors in shorts and a training top, and Kevin Moran's joking with me, he says, I know the Brick, I didn't see the Brick myself, he says, ah, the Brick will be wearing the shorts and the training top as well. Like, this is the generation difference. And yeah, it's true. Yeah, when you highlight it, these lads are so much older than all these young lads. Like, I mean, I go up to Portlaoise training a little bit now, and they're all so young that, you know, you can notice how much older you are. But for them still to be involved with these under 21s, like, they probably have very little in common with them, but they're still, you know, on the team, and they're so badly needed, and I don't think they'd even appreciate how much the young lads need them.
No, that's the thing as well, like, you know what I mean. But these, when these young lads come into dressing room first, they're probably looking at Brick and Kevin Moore now, through the years, even before when they were growing up, looking at them playing for Waterford, and for them to go into that dressing room and talk up beside them and look, enjoy the build up to this, I'll earn a file with them. But these younger lads are going to have to talk to the likes of Brick now and Kevin Moore as well for the next 3 weeks to kind of suss out what the build up is like to an Ireland final, because look, when you're young, you could get caught up in the whole thing, like, but it's going to be very, very important now for the young lads to talk to the likes of Brick and Kevin, which have been there before and done it, like, and have experienced the build up to it, like. So it's going to be huge now. Man management from Derek McGrath and the likes of Brick and Kevin, their leadership will come to a fore now in over the next 3 weeks as well.
Yeah, exactly. So performance of the weekend goes to, because I obviously have the final vote on this, lads, it doesn't matter who you nominate, but I'm going with Kevin Moran, because when the game was a battle in the first half, it was all about Kevin Moran. He was the leader then, and he produced it, and it's gas. Some lads like this, Kevin Moran probably loves that battle. In the last 15 minutes, Moran would kind of relax when the game's done. Yeah. He comes alive when the battle is there. Yeah. You know,
When it needs most,
Moran's at his best, and that's what a leader's all about. He's unbelievable where he gets his energy from, I'll never know. And like Paddy says, he doesn't look, there's an awkwardness about him sometimes when he strikes the ball and stuff, but he's just, like, he is unbelievable, and he's the heartbeat of the team along with Brick. So Kevin Moran is performer of the weekend, and that's all we have time for this week. We'll be back. I'm going to the Galway press conference on Tuesday, so we'll have Micheál O'Donoghue, hopefully, for, it's Thursday week, we'll be back for the All-Ireland preview show. It could be Thursday 2 weeks, but we'll talk to you then. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so it opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through, but it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.